You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, featuring Jeff Clark from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Welcome back, homies. Thanks for streaming today's Bet Slippin' Podcast. It's our NBA play-in special. I got my co-host here, the handicapping homie, Nathan Beagle, a.k.a. Nate Dogg, to help me break down all four games. Nate, what's up, brother?
What's up? I'm pretty pumped tonight. These first two playing games really going to get the juices flowing. How are you feeling about them?
Well, as you know, I've been doing an NBA podcast for Bet Slippin' daily, mostly Monday through Friday since the start of the year. NBA is like my number one gamble. I'm a high-volume NBA bettor. I'm going to be excited about the play-in regardless of the matchups. And I do like the matchups. Maybe when I was breaking them down, I kind of talked myself into them being pretty good. But, I mean, they let us bet money on this shit. We're going to make money betting it, and it's going to be exciting. Honestly, dude, my confidence is just through the roof right now. I killed it this regular season, and I always beat the shit out of the NBA playoffs. I'm probably jinxing myself right now, putting my foot in my mouth, but I like some underdog series prices. We'll talk about that later this week, actually. We're going to come back and do a playoff first-round series preview as well. But today we're just talking about the NBA play-ins, and I'm looking forward to them, and I'm pretty confident heading into the play-ins. How about you? How was your NBA regular season? How do you feel about these matchups? Whatever. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I like the matchups. I got a couple of dark horses I like. I think one thing that I would say is, I definitely like the to make the playoffs type bets, like Atlanta and teams like that. We'll talk about those a little bit deeper into the show, but I think those have good value, especially because some of the 7-8s in the conferences aren't as strong as they were earlier in the season. As for the actual regular season, I think I did pretty well. I won a lot on Oklahoma City, just blindly betting them some games because they were just so hot against the spread. But yeah, I think I had a pretty profitable NBA. So it was a good year.
Yeah, I killed it in the regular season. I was pretty excited about my performance. Hopefully.
Yeah, that show record was beautiful.
Yeah, the show record was sick. My side bets are pretty good too. Like if I shared those, like I would still be way in the black. So I don't know. I gotta stay somewhat humble because I did when I was like riding my highest during the NBA season, I had an 0-5 night and just got completely like mopped and got humbled a little bit. So I got to keep that perspective when I'm doing the NBA. I'm going to do an NBA daily postseason podcast as well. A lot of the listeners asked for that, and I'm going to do one. But I'm going to take some like 0-2, 0-3 nights. I'm going to try to mix in player props. So there'll be some swings this postseason, I'm sure, but I'm very confident I end up way in the black, and I'm going to be hammering some of these series prices. And I love a couple of these play-in games, actually. So if you have any other things...
Yeah, I think just for the sake of things, we probably want to let the listeners know, if you haven't kind of hinted at it already, I'm pretty sure we will be doing a podcast doing like a little series previews later in the week.
Yeah. I mentioned that a little earlier while you were collecting your notes. We're going to be doing an NBA first round playoff preview. Depending on how the schedule lines up, I'd like to do, you know, second round conference finals, NBA finals. You know, we'll just see how that works. I mean, this first round playoff schedule is so sick, right? I mean, there's no games Thursday. There's the final play-in games Friday, but every series starts Saturday. So we'll kind of have to guess on Thursday about how the outcomes of the Friday games, but we'll have most of the series is lined up and be able to analyze them from there. So we'll be coming with you with a first round playoff preview. And again, I will be doing a daily postseason NBA postseason podcast. Not sure if I'm doing the first weekend because honestly, I just want to kind of hang out over the weekend, but we'll see. I'll keep you guys posted on that. You can find all the details on my Twitter at Jeffrey_Clark, but no more bullshit. Let's talk about the play-in games, which I'm very excited about. The first game tips off tonight. We're recording Tuesday, April 12th. The first play-in game tips off tonight at 4 o'clock with the 8 seed Cleveland Cavaliers visiting the Brooklyn Nets. The spread's 8.5 with more juice on the Nets, according to Tipico, who I'll do an ad read for in the middle of this podcast. And the total sitting at 227.5. I'm pretty sure in your Twitter bio, you're the self-proclaimed under God. Is that how you're getting at this game, or are you taking a side here?
I'm going to take a side here, and I think it's been a good side for most of the year. When Jared Allen was an all-star, when he doesn't play, it's not the same Cavs team. And it's not like when Clint Capella doesn't play, the Hawks aren't the same defensively. It's when Jared Allen doesn't play, the Cavs are not the same on either side of the court. So they're the number eight seed coming in, but they were 9-16 without Jared Allen. I feel like sometimes you don't have to overthink it. There's some reverse line movement pregame suggesting that 65% of the cash is on the Cavaliers, yet the Nets went from -8 and are now -9. I think you just have to – I'm not going to overthink this one. I think you have the best two players, both pure scorers, and then the other team's going to be without their best player on both ends of the court. So I'm going to take the Brooklyn. And I know what the Twitter bio says, but hear me out here. The Cavs have one of the best they have one of the best defenses in the league with Allen. That's where they made the bread butter. That's why they started out so hot in the regular season. In their last 15 games, their defensive rating has slipped to 17th. And I mean, Allen's just a game changer. The Cavs are going to have to keep up. Brooklyn in their last 15 ranks 4th in offensive rating and 10th in pace. I think the over here is actually a good play. It's been absolutely churned down to 227, and I just see this being potentially a 118, 110 type game or something like that.
I actually think if the Nets...
Either way, I like the over and I like Brooklyn. I don't know if they're best bets for me yet. I haven't decided if they'd be best bets, but I think Brooklyn's just going to run over them, especially at home.
I hear you. I don't really hate your analysis there. I think if the Nets cover, I think the over is more likely. Like, I think the Nets are going to end up scoring in the mid-20s or mid-120s.
Yeah, that was kind of my point.
I do think, though, because the Nets backcourt, I wrote this up for sportsbookwire.usa.com today. The Nets defense is just unreliable for me to be laying 3 possessions with them. That's my thing, is the back door is going to be wide open. Obviously, it's close to an elimination game. So, like, the Cleveland Cavaliers aren't giving up. They're not mailing it in. They're going to be going from the final from opening buzzer to final buzzer. So I think the back door is wide open against this Nets defense because it's so bad. The season series, the Nets won, I think, 3-1. Straight up, but they were 2-2 against the spread. But the last meeting they had, which was this past Friday, the Nets won 118-107. And if people are going off of that score and that outcome, I think it's a little misleading. The Cleveland Cavaliers led entering the fourth quarter, and they actually outperformed the Nets on 3 of the 4 factors. Now, what they couldn't do, which is a direct relation to the absence of Jared Allen, is they could not finish defensive possessions by grabbing rebounds. Bruce Brown and just the Nets crashed the glass like crazy and got a ton of offensive rebounds. And we know what Kevin Durant's going to do. I think we're all pretty confident what Kyrie Irving's probably going to do, right? The reason why they lost to the Brooklyn Nets this past week was because Bruce Brown. Like, Bruce Brown had an epically great game. So if they're able to just, like, keep all the production with Kevin Durant or to Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, I think they could steal this game and definitely beat the closing number. We've seen the Nets lose games with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving just going nuts. Like, their supporting cast could really shit the bed for them in this game. And the Cavaliers have nice veterans who have been there before. I'm not putting much line value into Rondo, but Kevin Love can give you a surprising 20 off the bench and is far better than any bench player that Brooklyn's relying on. And I hear what you're saying. I'm scared of Kevin Durant like anyone else, right? But we have an 82-game sample size of this team. Granted, Kevin Durant was injured for a lot of them. This is just a spot that Brooklyn chokes in. They're 5-26 against the spread as home favorites, 6-14 against the spread at home versus winning teams, 3-9 against the spread as 7.5 to 9.5 point favorites. And Nate, that's the trend that jumps out to me the most. That's the trend. Those are the trends between you and me and the Bet Slippin' audience that I kind of glom on to the most is the pricing trends, because the context, like they say, like trends are missing context, but the context is made up in the pricing, right? So like when you're looking at 7.5 to 9.5 point spreads, anything the market feels about whatever injuries, whatever rest situation, whatever matchup factors is baked into the line. And the Nets don't cover as big favorites. Now, your point about Jared Allen is perfect and it's accurate. And people don't realize this, but Jared Allen, I think, led the NBA in offensive rating last year. Like, his vertical spacing, the way he plays pick and roll and rolls the basket is super important to Cleveland. So all your concerns are very valid, and I do understand and groove to the point of Cleveland being a public underdog, right, and that being scary. But as like lame and as square as it sounds, this is too big of a number for me to lay with the Nets. They just haven't proven it enough. I don't know. That's kind of where I sit. It's more of a lean than anything, but I would have to go with the Cavaliers right now. They're, according to Tipico, +8.5. So that's, if gun to my head, yeah, I would go with the Cavs.
I think part of the reason is it's tough for me to use season-long references with the Nets as well, because you have Kyrie Irving playing half the time. You had James Harden playing the other half the time. And then their offense is just completely revamped with Irving in the lineup. I think it's tough to understand what you're going to get. I'm not sure I would suggest playing either side. It's more a lean for me, because there is a lot. And then you also have to consider the Cavs will be without Allen. Well, all season long, they rank fourth. They have the 27th worst turnover rate. So it's like, are they going to turn the ball over much? Even though the Nets defense isn't great, they're an older group with Aldridge and Mills. But if Cleveland has a ton of unforced turnovers, and then even more to your point, if they do view this as an elimination game, if they foul down the stretch, I mean, those things can, I mean, they're professionals. They could make their free throws. Those things will probably could push the game over. I think both sides could cover if it comes down to the stretch like that. But generally, I agree. This is a tough number to lay both ways.
Yeah, the one thing that throws me off the Cavaliers scent is just it feels like a square play. Like, it feels like the odds makers are begging for Cavalier money, like just begging for it. And obviously you don't want to play into their hands. So,
well, to be fair, they are. I mean, at least I know we've both spoken interestingly of pregame, especially when we talk about them, it's 1:24 Eastern time, but they say that 66% of cash is on the Cavs, and the line went from -8.5 to -9 now per pregame.
Yeah.
There is some reverse line movement there. Again, it's all what you want to take into consider. You can find positives and negatives for both sides.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think that's some like buyback. Like, I think the early bettors hit the Nets hard in both the cash and the tickets columns was showing that. And now people are like, well, it's 9, 9.5. It got to 9.5 on some books, so they're like buying it back. But I mean, we've spent a lot of time talking about a game that I actually haven't placed a bet on yet. I probably will before tip-off because, you know, I'm a high-volume NBA bettor.
Who I am.
Yeah, that's kind of how I get down. But I have a heavy lean towards the Cavs, and that's what I'll officially leave it at here in the Bet Slippin'
Podcast.
Yeah,
let's move on to the funner game, the more enjoyable game.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited about this game. The 6:30 p.m. 7-8 seed matchup in the Western Conference, the Los Angeles Clippers visiting the Minnesota Timberwolves. The odds currently are the Timberwolves favored 3.5. The total sitting at 230.5. And, you know, to just keep you and the Bet Slippin' Podcast listeners posted. I think I'm going to end up with my biggest sports bet of my life on this game. Up to this point, I'm just going to end up betting more at some point in the NBA playoffs, I'm sure. But I have a huge bet here, and I love the Clippers here. I was hoping you could find a way to argue for the Timberwolves, but talking to you...
I got you.
Okay. Okay. Cool. All right. Cool.
I found some things I like. So
about the Timberwolves.
Yes. The Timberwolves. Somehow we're going there.
So Clippers are 3-1 straight up and against the spread versus the Timberwolves this season. All three of the Clippers' wins came in November. Pretty sure D'Angelo Russell missed all three of those games. Paul George definitely played in all three. Minnesota beat the shit out of the Clippers in their fourth game, 122-104, January 3rd. But Karl Anthony Towns was out. Both Clippers' bigs were out, and so were Paul George. So it's kind of a throwaway game, but you can argue so were the first three in November. So I'm very interested in hearing the pro-Minnesota argument because I couldn't get there on it, and that's just not how sports betting works. Like, Minnesota can absolutely win this game. So what are the reasons that you see them having some value here, perhaps?
Yeah, so Minnesota's been pretty good as a home favorite this year, 15-12-1 against the spread, whereas Los Angeles is 15-14 as a road dog. Kind of a wash there, but it just goes to show that Minnesota does cover at home. And then a few other things that kind of really lean in Minnesota's favor is they rank second in opponents' turnover rate. So they have an aggressive defense. They have a long defense. Who's going to be playing on Paul George? Probably Jared Vanderbilt, who has a 7'1" wingspan. So Paul George might not have easy games. Sure, those November matchups might have been different. You also have to realize, I mean, that was 5 months ago. So take it how you want. But the Clippers ranked 14th in turnover rate. I expect them to be a bit more caring with the ball in this matchup. But then you look at a few other things. Minnesota sits 5th in second chance points. They have length. Vanderbilt and what's that other guy's name? Jaden McDaniels, Patrick Beverley, Anthony Edwards. They have high flyers that can all get to the ball. So they rank 5th in second chance points. You know where LA sits in opponent's second chance points is dead last. They're not a great rebounding team. They rank 27th in defensive rebounding rate. That should be worrisome to me. I don't always trust Zubac, and even when they go smaller, I'm not a huge Morris fan. I think LA is going to easily get to the playoffs, but Minnesota's their rebounding is concerning. On the other side, Minnesota ranks 7th in offensive rebounding rate, and at large, they're 26-15 at home. They play well at home. They play with energy. And I think the other thing that just makes me a little skeptical is that Minnesota has like a lot of boom or bust players. Like D'Angelo Russell could drop 35. Anthony Edwards could drop 35. Cat could drop 60. I mean, obviously they probably won't, but if they get hot, they get hot. And I think they have a higher ceiling than Minnesota. And I think that would at least scare me a little bit. That and the rebounding are my two biggest concerns. Again, I'm not playing a side here. I'm not playing. I mean, I probably will play this game in some regard, but I'm probably not going to throw a heavy bet on this game like you are.
Yeah, I'm like all in on the Clippers. Not all in. I'm pretty well bankrolled, but I'm betting a big number on the Clippers here. So I thought this is interesting, trying to reverse engineer the Clippers 42-40 record, and I figured it out. Their players suck. Like, I mean, Paul George played 30 games.
We've talked about this personally.
Yeah, their players suck. We've talked about just like the
best coaching they have the best coaching, which is one reason to love them.
Yeah. Yeah. Their continuity and their coaching is just, it's tight. You know, they went 6 games in the Western Conference Finals with the Phoenix. And if you remember, Phoenix won one of those games with a walk in like buzzer beater alley oop to DeAndre Ayton, which was absolutely sick play. It was a sick play, but like, let's be honest, it was kind of fluky. So like, that series could have went 7. Either way, Phoenix is the better team, no arguing that, but like, the Clippers have more big game playoff experience, and I think this is going to be not shocking but a little surprising for the audience to hear. I'm going to say it confidently: Paul George is the best player on the floor. He is. Like, Karl Anthony Towns, I love. Great offensive big man, right? But Paul George is an absolute terror And he is, in my opinion, the best player on the floor. You disagree?
I thought you were about to say best player on the planet. No, I agree, he's the best player on the court. I thought you were about to say something crazy.
No. I'm not getting that crazy. No, Paul George's, I love Paul George's game. I can't get that far, but like two-way players, there isn't a lot of players ahead of him. Like he's phenomenal defensively. But when reverse engineering the Clippers 42-40 record, their leading scorers, I mean, their two leading scorers, Paul George and Norman Powell. Norman Powell played 3 games. Paul George played 30 games. So beneath that, you have Reggie Jackson, who's shooting like 39%, averaging 17 points per game. Marcus Morris, who's playing pretty good, but averaging 15 points per game. Then I think it's Luke Kennard, averaging 12 points per game. But the reason why the Clippers have a winning record and are as formidable as they are, especially game in, game out, is because the NBA is all about or mostly about three-point shooting, and they are the second-best team behind the arc in the NBA. And what I mean by that is the differential between their three-point shooting percentage and their defensive three-point percentage is the second-best in the league behind the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are the only team better behind the arc than the Clippers. They have the second-best adjusted or non garbage time three-point shooting percentage and the sixth best adjusted three-point shooting percentage. Minnesota chucks up threes and they allow threes to be chucked against them. They're third in three-point attempt rate and they shoot a lot of catch and shoot and off the dribble threes. The Clippers defend the three-point really well, and again, the Timberwolves allow their opponents to hoist threes. If you're going to allow the Clippers to shoot threes, they're going to bury you. Like they're going to hit those threes most likely, and they're gonna prevail. Also, this line is 3.5. So they're effectively, the odds makers are thinking this is going to come down to the final possessions in the last couple minutes, right? So to me, you're looking at clutch time, right? Clutch time net rating. The Clippers, I think, are fifth in clutch time net rating. They got a plus 10.8 points per 100 possessions in the final 5 minutes of games within 5-point margin. They're 24-18 straight up in those spots. Minnesota, minus 0.9 net rating, 16th. So in close games, they struggled to pull them out. And even more to the point, like Paul George can create his own offense. He can bring the ball up the court and create his own look. Karl Anthony Towns, phenomenal. He's not bringing the ball up the court. You can play ball denial, and you can do things to keep Karl Anthony Towns from catching the ball in advantageous positions. And the other thing is just like the coaching god that Ty Lue is. Like this guy is an ultimate mastermind and in-game adjustment coach. And how I think he's going to have them now this isn't predictive, this is more me guessing, but how I think he's going to have the Clippers defend Karl Anthony Towns is I think he's going to bait him by giving Karl Anthony Towns space to catch the ball and to feel like he can go one-on-one, and I think they're going to collapse on him and make him force him into making a quick decision where he can throw the ball or commit turnovers. Now, your defensive rebounding point and your defensive turnover rate point for Minnesota, perfect. Like, that is my biggest concern. Minnesota crashes the glass like crazy, right? But in the 4 meetings between the Clippers and Minnesota this year, per game, the Clippers are getting 5.8 rebounds more than the Minnesota Timberwolves. So when they match up, like Ty Lue knows that his team can't defensive rebound, and he knows the other team can. So he game plans around that, and he's going to have the Clippers finish off defensive possessions by grabbing rebounds. Also, you didn't mention him. Isaiah Hartenstein, the backup big, is a problem for the Clippers. He's nasty. And they have size to throw at Karl Anthony Towns. Karl Anthony Towns likes to put the ball on the ground. He doesn't want to put the ball on the floor against Marcus Morris, Terrence Mann, Paul George, these long, Nicholas Batum, these long arms, Robert Covington. Like, they're so long at the wing. It's going to make it really tough for Karl Anthony Towns to move. Also, one last note that I have on this game. The Los Angeles Clippers have won the free throw battle handedly over Minnesota, and that's the thing that I think will be consistent. The Clippers are averaging 5.5 more free throw attempts per game when they play the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Minnesota Timberwolves have the second worst defensive free throw attempt rate, so they send their opponents to the foul line a lot. Here's the thing, too, with that. Pat Beverly played for the Los Angeles Clippers. Do you think the Ty Lue knows how to get under Pat Beverly's skin? Probably, right? Pat Beverly is a very emotional dude, makes stupid fouls a lot, gets overly aggressive. He'll make fouls 85 feet from the basket, which is absurd. That you cannot do that in the NBA, and you can't do that in an elimination game. And Karl Anthony Towns is another emotional player that I think can get rattled by Marcus Morris's chippiness, and it all kind of ties into the fact that this team, the Clippers, are just more playoff tested. They know what they are. They have more of an identity, and I think when push comes to shove, when the rubber meets the road, whatever bleeping cliche you want to use, the Clippers are going to figure this out inside of 48 minutes. I'll even go one further as a tease to the next episode. I'm putting my foot in my mouth this bullshit, Nate. I think the Clippers beat the Memphis Grizzlies. I love the Memphis Grizzlies. Memphis Grizzlies have made me a lot of money this year. They cannot play half court offense, and that's going to be a problem in the playoffs. And it's going to be a very big problem against Ty Lue. And they don't even need Kawhi Leonard back, I think, to beat them. And I don't know. I'm high on the Clippers. I could end up falling really flat on my face if they lose this game, because, like, in my opinion, I'm making my biggest in-game or pre-game sports bet on this one, right? If this is a 7-game series, I would be asking you to borrow money to bet on the Clippers. Like, there would be no way the Minnesota Timberwolves make it out of this series, in my opinion. 48 minutes, yeah, they can get hot. Of course, like, you can handicap every game like that. Well, Karl Anthony Towns is a beast. Anthony Edwards, a former number one pick. Like, they can get hot from three. Yeah, so could Luke Kennard. That's not predictive analysis. So we spent a lot on this game because it's my favorite bet, but I'm hammering the Clippers like an idiot. I took the 2.5. I'm going to have to put another super fat bet on the 3.5 because, like, if I like it at 2.5, I love it at 3.5. So whatever. Like, I don't know. I am a little nervous about the reverse line movement. I'm thinking maybe it's just me trying to talk myself into the Clippers, and regardless, I just think the books took a lot of sharp money initially and are moving it against the sharp money. And yeah, the public might be coming in on the Clippers, but the books are afraid of the sharps that are betting the Timberwolves. So I'm fading what I think is sharp money. Maybe I'm an idiot. We'll see. But I like the Clippers 3.5. All right, man. So
can't blame it. I like the reasoning. I like the rationale.
All right, cool. Let's go to the Friday games. The first one on Friday, 7:00 Eastern Standard tip-off. Excuse me, Southeastern divisional matchup with the Charlotte Hornets, who are the 10th seed out east, playing the 9th seed Atlanta Hawks, both at a 43-39 record. The Hawks are favored 4.5. Money line's minus 200, plus 160 for the Hornets. The total is 236.5. Holy shit, that's a big number. The Hawks and the Hornets tied the season series 2-2 straight up and against the spread. The total, interestingly enough, is 1-6 to the under in their last 7 Charlotte-Atlanta meetings. Nate, how are you getting down on this game?
Yeah, so I think one important thing to note is it doesn't look like John Collins is going to be playing, which, I mean, he's probably Atlanta's second best scorer. I don't think that matters much. I see that. I hear that. Atlanta was 17-10 this season without Collins in the lineup. They're 19-15 as a home favorite. They rebound well. They have experience from going to the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago. Like I said, I don't have a ton on this. My favorite bet in this game is for Atlanta to reach the playoffs, so I would rather not even worry about the points and play that instead. You can get that at plus 240. And I kind of just think considering Jared Allen looks like he's going to be out for both games, we both, at least it sounds like we both think the Nets will advance, even if they don't cover. I think there's no way I'm taking the team with more experience. And Charlotte's just been, sure, they have good wins, but I'm not sure how quality a ton of those wins have been. They played a high pace. And I think Atlanta can slow this game down, play at half court with Capella, and win pretty easily.
No shit. Or opposite. I think I like the Hornets. Here's a question I have for you.
That's fair. Who do you think? I couldn't get behind them. I like watching the Hornets. They're the most enjoyable team probably to watch in the NBA.
I don't hate that. Who do you prefer, LaMelo Ball or Trae Young?
I mean, I'm going to prefer the one that I'm pretty sure he led the league in assists, right? Trae Young?
No, Chris Paul did. But, I mean, Trae Young probably wasn't far behind him. So
I like Trae Young. I think he's a baller. I think dude knows how to get to the line. He knows how to work the pick and roll. You can go with LaMelo all you want, but until he's shooting with Trae shooting from three, I'm taking Trae.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Well, let me tell you how Trae's shooting from three when he plays LaMelo Ball. Are you interested in that?
What, like the three matchups they've played each other?
Well, they've played each other five times in the last 2 years. I mean, LaMelo Ball was a rookie. Do you don't think that's a big enough sample size?
I just don't think I care. Now, I'm not saying
that you'll listen at least.
I don't think it necessarily does a ton for this matchup. I mean, Trae Young shooting 38% from deep and hitting three triples a game. I'm not sure how he's played against LaMelo is going to sway my mind.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, LaMelo's Hornets are 3-2 against Trae Young, and since the beginning of last season, LaMelo Ball is outscoring him. He has more rebounds per game, more assists per game, half the turnovers. He's shooting 100 percentage points better from the field. He's shooting 35% from three compared to Trae Young's 28%. So you're really ignoring a lot there. Like he's got better points per game, rebounds per game, assists per game, fewer turnovers, shooting better from everywhere on the floor. Well, not the foul line, but he's shooting LaMelo 95% or 94% from the foul line in those games.
They were 2-2 this season. Atlanta would have covered five both times, and they lost at home to Charlotte by three once. And again, you're saying it. If they can do that with Trae Young not shooting well, he's not going to always shoot well. You think every time he plays Charlotte, he's going to throw up a goose egg? I mean, he hasn't played well a ton this season, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just a Trae Young apologist and I like him a little too much.
That's fair. And I can't stand Trae Young. I think he actually hurts the sport.
I think that's because you like the Knicks. Aren't you a Knicks fan?
I am a Knicks fan, but I'm not.
Yeah, you don't like the ice tray in the garden.
Oh, that for sure pissed me off. But I mean, that's not really why I don't like him. I think that he makes the sport worse with his gimmicky official manipulating bullshit.
That's how I feel about Luka Doncic sometimes. I love Doncic, but even Curry got into it. Pump fake, just let me throw my body 3 feet to the left. And Trae Young's the worst. He'll get the defender on his hip and just jump backwards.
Like, to me, James Harden and Trae Young make the sport of basketball worse. They do.
I absolutely cannot disagree.
And you can make the argument, and I don't even hate the argument, or as well, you know, they're doing whatever they can to win the game, and you know, it's within the rules or whatever. But, you know, once the playoffs start, you start losing these officiating, or the officiating becomes a little tougher. They swallow their whistles, and to me, that hurts Trae Young. And you said experience. I got to be honest, I don't think much of their experience. And that's part of my thing with Phoenix as well, which we'll talk about in the playoff preview. I don't think their experience really means that much. Atlanta, who did they beat last year? They beat New York, who finished in 11th seed.
Right?
They beat the Sixers. Look what happened. Look what happened with the Philadelphia 76ers.
They literally made the Sixers implode on themselves.
Maybe they made that happen, or if just Ben Simmons dunks the ball, everything's okay. Like the
best moment in NBA history.
The absolute like shit your pants, pee down your leg moment. One of the bigger moments in playoff history was Doc Rivers and Ben Simmons last year in the playoffs, and they lost the Bucks. Like, granted, the Atlanta Hawks were kind of the it team coming into the season, but like they really underperformed expectations because I think their expectations were too high. So let's talk about the basketball aspect of this, because I see two strength on weakness edges in favor of Charlotte. One is fast break basketball and one is interior or paint points. Charlotte is first in paint or fast break points added per 100 possessions, according to cleaningtheglass.com. Atlanta's defense has the second worst fast break efficiency. So if Charlotte can speed up the tempo, they're going to crush Atlanta on the fast break. Also, Charlotte likes to attack the paint, and they attempt a bunch of field goals at the rim. Atlanta's 19th in paint points per game allowed and 21st in defensive field goal percentage at the rim. Also, Atlanta's very tough at home, right? But Charlotte's profitable versus good home teams. Charlotte's 7-2-1 against the number in their last 10 road games versus teams with a winning home winning percentage of 60% or better. Also, both these teams are mid-tier teams. Charlotte performs a lot better against mid-tier teams. Atlanta, 11-18 straight up, minus 2.6 adjusted net rating and a minus 2.7 ATS differential versus those middle of the pack teams. Really, the only argument I see, the biggest argument I see for Atlanta here is the fact that they're home and they're a tough home team, and I can't ignore that. Your point, like they shoot much better at home, their offense is much better at home, and it does feel like a possible square number, this 4.5, which is now getting up to 5. Most of the market apparently is on Atlanta, but I'll take Charlotte here, it'll be a best bet. I like Charlotte here.
I'm also going to say, if you like Charlotte in this matchup, you might as well at least consider plus 550 for them to make the playoffs.
Is that untypical?
Yeah,
I don't hate that at all.
Minus plus 550 for Charlotte to make the playoffs. Yes.
I would take that better for you guys.
Double check that for me all you want, but it's minus 847 for no, plus 550 for yes. I think the winner of this, at the end of the day, I think me and you might both be in agreement. I think the winner of this game makes playoffs.
I think the winner of this game certainly beats the Cavs.
And either way, I'm not saying do this, but you can bet both these teams, and if they beat the Cavs, you make money. It wouldn't be a smart bet, but
that's not a terrible bet. I don't hate your logic. I'm trying to poke holes in it, but
you bet $10 on each team. If the Hawks lose, you have 10 to make 55 to for Charlotte. So,
right. What's Atlanta's price to make the playoffs?
240. So you heard Jeff and you're like, hell yeah, Jeff's right. Plus 550 for Charlotte to make the playoffs is probably would be my better way to make that. And if you really feel sketchy, you can hedge it because they'll probably be underdogs in Cleveland.
That's actually pretty good stuff. I like that. Yeah, because like if you bet both the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets to make the playoffs now, you're going to profit regardless of what happens, right?
Only if they beat the Cavs.
Right. I misspoke. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but yes, and I like that. I think you're going to see them get exposed so often without, I mean, we should have talked about this earlier. Okora, Garland's going to be a superstar, but Okora, Dean Wade, Lamry Stevens, I like them. They're not bad, but they're not at the level to be able to compete with Miles Bridges and Clint Capella.
Yeah, no, to circle back on that, like the injury to Steph, to Luka, obviously much more important, but people are really sleeping on the injury to Jared Allen. Like it's an unrecoverable injury for Cleveland, in my opinion. Like I don't see them beating either one of these three teams without Jared Allen.
And I honestly think Luka and Steph even potentially less because Poole wouldn't play. I think the injury to Jared Allen is more crushing for the Cavs than if the Warriors were to miss Steph. I mean, Klay Thompson can lead a team through an entire game.
Yeah. Yeah, we just haven't seen Darius Garland do something like that. And that's kind of what they need. They need Darius Garland to go nuts.
I'm telling you, if you just heard what Jeff said and you love it, plus 550 for the Hornets to make the playoffs is outstanding.
Yeah, I don't hate that value. Damn, good shit. All right, cool. Let's go to the final play-in game here that's scheduled to tip off Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, when the San Antonio Spurs visit the New Orleans Pelicans. Right now, according to Tipico, the New Orleans Pelicans are favored 4.5 points, moneyline minus 210. San Antonio plus 170, total sitting at 226.5, which is down significantly from the opener, which is 232. Shit, I let a good number go away. I still kind of like the under here. How are you getting at this game, if at all? I think this is the toughest game. Actually, let me set the table a little bit. San Antonio led the season series 3-1 straight up and against the spread. They've actually won and covered 8 of their last 9 meetings with New Orleans. The total is 1-7 to the under in the last 8. Are you getting down on this game in any shape or form? I think it's a tough matchup.
I think it's tough, and partially why it's tough is because the Spurs have made me a lot of money this year. Mm-hmm. And I like them in almost every sense of who they are. They defend. They have athletes at every position. They don't turn the ball over. They're extremely well coached. They're 19-12-1 against the spread as home favorites. They rebound. They rebound at a – actually, maybe their defensive rebounding sucks, apparently, 24th. But they offensive rebounding at the 8th highest rate. They do a lot of good things, and they're going to be able to throw athletes at Brandon Ingram and C.J. McCollum. And Ingram's been out the last few games. I believe that's with a calf or hamstring strain. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he'll be at 100% entering this one. I'm assuming he'll play. And I think 5 is a big number for this. So I like the Spurs at plus 5. I think they do a little bit of everything well. And I think for it to at least be a close game, if this were 2.5, if this were a 1-possession game, I would probably favor the Pelicans because I do like them. I think you can get them to make the playoffs at plus 320. And I seriously would think about that considering how their players are more consistent than probably the Timberwolves. But I like the Spurs here at plus 5.
That feels mispriced, though. New Orleans only 320 to make the playoffs, whereas Atlanta and Charlotte have higher numbers, and I think a softer.
Well, Atlanta's is lower. Atlanta's is 240, and Charlotte's Pelicans are 350. This one's 350, and then 900 for the Spurs.
Good catch. Okay. All right. No. All right. That makes more sense than I'm hearing it. I actually do think. The Pelicans get past the Spurs, and actually I would take them against the Timberwolves. I'm assuming they'd get points there, so I would just take the points there. But I more or less lean to the Pelicans. They have a strength on edge weakness strength on weakness edges and rebounding and paint points. Mm-hmm. As you just mentioned, San Antonio's defensive rebounding rate is really low. I think you said 26 or something like that. New Orleans' offensive rebounding rate is really high. They score a lot of second chance points per game. San Antonio gives up a lot of second chance points per game. And they give up a lot of paint points per game as well. And that's where New Orleans feasts, especially with Brandon Ingram. He likes to operate in the mid range. And obviously, Valanciunas likes to get in the mid range. And CJ McCollum has a mid range game to him as well. Also, it feels like San Antonio is turning into a bit of a public dog. I mean, they're getting majority of the money in action, according to pregame.com. And as we talked about with Cleveland earlier, public dogs tend to have fleas is the expression. So I do lean towards the Pelicans. I do think it's a sharp number, 4.5. I as well coached as obviously San Antonio is with Greg Popovich. I don't know. I do think there are a bit of smoke and mirrors. It is a lot of DeJounte Murray. Their 3-point shooting is just terrible. It really is. They do not have a good offense. And Pelicans have been playing really good defense and have been one of the better teams in the league since the All-Star break. Well, they have been much better since the All-Star break as opposed to their earlier production. I also have a pretty heavy lean towards the under. The only reason it's a lean, though, is because we're just getting the worst of the number. It started at 232 and it's at 226.5 according to Tipico. But situationally, the trends point to this being an under. New Orleans is 5-10 to the under as a home favorite, minus 4.3 total margin. San Antonio's 12-19-1 to the under as road dogs with a minus 2.1 margin. There's a pros versus Joes game with the pro money favoring the under. And styles make fights. Again, these teams are 1-7 to the under in their last 8 meetings. Both teams have a bottom 10 true shooting percentage and 3-point attempt rate. So they don't attempt a lot of threes, and they're not very good at hitting them anyways, which makes me feel stronger about the under, especially one that's priced in the high 220s, now mid 220s. And New Orleans is really good at getting to the free throw line, which is a way that they could help push this game over. But San Antonio is really good at keeping opponents off the free throw line, so maybe the Pelicans don't get as many free throw attempts. I lean to the under and I lean to the Pelicans, but I'm not going to make an official play.
I was about to say, I feel like that game's all kind of what you want to believe in, because you're saying rebounding. Well, at the same time, Spurs sit second in turnover rate, where the Pelicans sit 21st. But neither team shoots a ton of threes. I would think the Spurs are a better three, like a more volume 3-point shooting team. I guess I could be wrong there.
I can look it up.
Either way, I'm not.
Spurs like I said, shoot I'm not the super second. Sold on either. Spurs have the second lowest 3-point attempt volume, and then the Pelicans have the sixth lowest or seventh lowest. So both of them don't shoot a lot of threes. So, but to your point, yeah, like I lean Pelicans. So my analysis was all Pelicans, but yeah, there are reasons like the Spurs, hence the lean, you know? So
sounds like the under is the strong play in this game.
I do, but dude, it started at 232 and it's at 226. I still like it at 226, but I feel dumb giving it out at 226.
Tipico says 92% of the cash is on the under. I guarantee you not many. That's probably all sharp money, because no one that's just a general bettor has bet that game yet.
Yeah, for sure. That's definitely the least attractive of the three games.
But yeah, I'm fine with. I didn't feel super strongly about the Spurs. It's almost like if I feel like indifferent about the teams, I'm just going to take the underdog. I'm just going to get points.
All right. Well, I think we did some good work here. Do you want to lock in our best bets and go into the window?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Before we get over to the window, let me shout out the odds provider and sponsor of this podcast, Tipico Sportsbook. They're a global sports betting leader that's now live in New Jersey and Colorado. You can make your favorite sports more interesting with Tipico's fast and easy mobile sportsbook app. New users from this podcast can get a special welcome bonus today at usatodaybet.com/podcast. That's usatodaybet.com/podcast. Terms and conditions do apply. You must be 21 or older to game, so please see Tipico's website for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER for New Jersey, and 1-800-522-4700 for Colorado. Please remember to gamble responsibly. Okay, so as we do every episode, we're going to the window with our best bets.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
I have the Los Angeles Clippers +3.5, and I'm taking the Charlotte Hornets +4.5. I got leans on the Pelicans and the under in that game, and leans on the Cavs, but I can't get there on those two. It's your bet slip. What's your bet slip looking like, Nate?
I'm going Nets under 227, Spurs under 227, and then I don't care. Give me the Hawks +240 to make the playoffs.
All righty. So we can both win that one with the Hornets keeping it within 4 and the Hawks winning.
Yeah, let's hope that's a double win.
Yeah, let's hope it plays out that way. Thanks for checking us out. Please do me a favor and share, subscribe, rate, follow the podcast. Show us love any way you can. Also, be on the lookout for our upcoming NBA playoff first round preview podcast. Should be dropping this Thursday. And again, I will be doing a routine periodical somewhat daily NBA postseason podcast. So look out for that in your bet slip and feed. Do you have any final thoughts for the listeners?
No, I'm just really excited about this slate, and I like meaningful basketball. So I'm hyped for it.
All right. Well, best of luck to you guys, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days. Peace.
Peace.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast. featuring Jeff Clark from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.